Action on the WGTD Facebook Live page features Badger and Westosha. Now the WGTD forecast from the National Weather Service on this Friday, January 5th. Sunny, breezy, and bitterly cold. Another wind chill advisory in effect till 10 a.m. Today's high only 9 above, with wind chills down to 23 below. New numbers are in, 1 below Racine, 2 below Kenosha. Wind from the west-northwest at 8, wind chill is minus 14. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. Coming up on 8:11, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
Support for the morning show comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information at carthage.edu/grad. Support also comes from Jack Andrea, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Jack Andrea, 2401 60th Street, online at jackandrea.com. And we welcome you to the Friday morning show. I'm Gregory Berg. We're going to be playing back for you portions of two memorable conversations from 2017. The first is with a remarkable young woman by the name of Shritha Reddy. At the time of this interview, she was just 11 years old, a middle school student at Prairie School. She was actually at WGTD at the invitation of our own Nan Calvert, who, of course, pays a monthly visit to the morning show. I asked Nan Calvert to explain how she had first become aware of young Shritha Reddy and the work that she was doing on behalf of the important cause of safe drinking water.
I first became aware of this truly wonderful young woman through our friend, Joan Rory, and then my good friend, Tiffany Fitch Behrens, also knows Shritha, and I thought, boy, it would be a wonderful opportunity to have her come on the radio with us and talk about what she's doing for so many different reasons. So my friends set the ball in motion, and we got permission from her wonderful parents and from school to spring her today so she could be here with us. And here we are.
Shritha Reddy is an 11-year-old student at Prairie School in Racine. And Shritha, at the tender age of actually 10, I think, created her own nonprofit organization to attack some of the most vexing issues and problems related to safe water, both here and around the world. And her organization is called SHOW, Start Helping Our Water Resources. And she has already organized one fundraising event with more to follow. And she is anxious to spread the word about the importance of all of us having access to clean and safe water. So we are going to have a conversation about all that and hear the story, first of all, of what got her so involved and interested and inspired to work on this. And we're going to talk further, not only about the issue of water itself, but also the issue of activism and advocacy and the importance of everybody doing their part about the issues that they care about, even if you're 11 years old. Shritha Reddy, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you, Mr. Bird. Thank you, Mrs. Calvert.
You're welcome.
I'm so happy to be on the show today. It's really important to get the word out about anything that's good for our environment. So being 11 years old, I kind of wanted to do something of my own. And ever since I was little, I've always been interested in water and how it's so vital for our health and how sometimes it's not always easy to find it. So I always wanted to do something of my own, and that's how I kept on thinking, what can I do? And then one day hit me, why not I put on a fundraiser? Because I learned an Indian classical dance called Bharatanatyam. I play the flute and the violin. So I wanted to combine my talents and create something that I could show my talents and raise money at the same time for a great cause. So that's why I wanted to make a nonprofit organization, because it's a great way to help others, and it's just something that just popped into my mind. So First, when I was thinking of the name, it took me a really long time to think of the name because I wanted to connect it to how I raise funds, which was a show. And so after like 2 months of thinking, it finally hit me, why not say, start helping our water resources. And you combine the water resources with one R, so it creates one word, and that spells out show.
So you can put on a show and raise money for the organization called Show, and you have this wonderful synergy going. So one of the things you mentioned in the speech that you gave at the Racine Theater Guild for your first fundraiser in the middle of August was that at least part of your inspiration for wanting to do something and making a difference was the example of your older brother and something that he did. Explain to our listeners what your older brother did and how that fed into your idea to do something yourself.
So, well, my older brother's name is Sandeep Reddy, and I love my brother a lot. And so he also loves to help others, and he loves to do math, and he finds it really interesting. And so we approached the Racine Public Library, and he had the idea, why not I help students with math? So he started, and he created the after-school math club. And what that meant was that kids could come after school to the Racine Public Library, and if they needed any help with math, homework, or anything else like that, my brother would show them. And if they didn't have anything to do, my brother created worksheets, and it would help them. And sometimes they would go into advanced math. And every single month, they would sometimes do, like, March Madness. They would do different math problems, and they would get published in newspaper. So it was really fun, and that always inspired me because watching my older brother help others was like why I want to do something too. And he started when he was, I think it was sixth grade. So I'm like, I want to do something as well while I'm young because I want to inspire others like my brother did.
Right. And how long did he do that?
He did it for 7 years in a row. So he continued it through high school. And then now that he's in college at Emory University in Atlanta, he's going to continue something else in Atlanta.
Right. I think that's really it's such a cool story on a lot of different levels. And one of the most important things about your brother's story is that I think lots of people get ideas and do something in a little spurt of energy and excitement, but it's another thing to follow through and to do it the next month and the next month and the next month and the next month and on from 1 year to another and another. And the fact that your brother did that all of that time really says something about how committed he was to the cause.
Yeah.
So it's a great, great story. So let's find out a little bit about this interest you have had for quite a long time in water. And it's something that most of us tend to take for granted, and for some reason you don't. I wonder if part of the reason you appreciate water is because of the fact that your family has some connection to the beautiful nation of India, where I think the people really have to think about water a lot. Does that have anything to do with your interest in water?
Well, it kind of has something to do with my interest because since I love India because that's where my family's from, I realize that they also don't get the cleanest water. And, I mean, that doesn't only apply for India. It applies for other places around the world. And so I wanted to change that because in America, even in Racine, we have Lake Michigan right next to us. So we have the water that we need. But other places around the world don't have the same resources that we have. And I wanted to change that because we can't take everything that we have for granted because it always has a reason behind it for why it's there for us. Mm. And so since the United States is as developed as it is, other places around the world aren't. And I want to change that. Just because they're developing doesn't mean that they can't have the same opportunities or resources that we have.
Right. And so, they deserve clean, fresh water as much as we do.
Yeah.
You were saying before we went on the air that one of the really sort of specific moments in your young life when you became even more interested and intrigued by this whole issue was something that happened in third grade with a wonderful teacher that is also a friend of mine. I want you to tell our listeners about what happened in third grade with your third grade teacher and how that helped to be a real catalyst for what you're doing today.
Well, So from second grade and down, I didn't really care about like what I wanted to do in the future. I was kind of just enjoying school, having fun with my friends, doing my extracurriculars. But in third grade, under Mrs. Grobschmidt, which was my third grade teacher, we went by Lake Michigan and we did stream testing. And I noticed how much algae there was on the beach, and I wanted to change that because when I was little, I didn't think that America had that many problems with water. But when I saw this, it's not just us, but it's also the animals that live in the water. And so we would test like different pH levels and oxygen levels, and we would see and we would look at different animals in the water. And that's when I really wanted to do something, and I wanted to do something not just for other places around the world, but locally in Racine. So Mrs. Grobschmidt was a really big like driving point for me.
Yeah. So explain to our listeners what the problem is with algae. I mean, most people look at algae and they might even think it's kind of pretty or just kind of interesting looking, but they wouldn't realize that algae in the water can be a problem. What is the problem with algae? Explain that.
Well, sometimes what algae can do, it can take up space, and when it takes up space, plants and animals that are actually really good for us actually have to go away, and algae isn't good because it just kind of eats all of the good things in water, and it takes up all the nutrients, and while other animals that are good for our environment and that help clean it are actually, they have to die because they don't have the resources that they need to survive.
Or they have to go someplace else.
Yeah.
So we don't want too much algae in our water levels. So you were actually taking some of these testings and readings and seeing the numbers for yourself. Where were you doing this exactly?
So whenever we went down, we would go down by Lake Michigan, and there's this one stream that goes right into it. And we would so Lake Michigan is really close to our school because it's like right across from us. And so it would be like this nice little stream, and the water was pretty deep. And so we could test it, and we had like different tubes that we could test like the pH level and the level of different oxygen. And it had like really good water sometimes, and sometimes if the algae got into it, it wasn't the best that you could have. So we would notice like different reading levels, and sometimes we would go do it with our class, and then sometimes we could get the equipment for ourselves, and my dad and I would go and we would do it and by ourselves because we knew the process of how to do it. And so we would record the information in different areas. It wasn't just by Lake Michigan. One time we went to this park and they had water, and we would go and look at theirs, and there would be different levels depending on where it was.
So you started realizing that even though we don't have the kind of water problems that a lot of places do, that even in a place like Racine, there are things we have to be careful about, and that we have even problems of our own, that we're not necessarily taking care of our water as well as we should be.
Yeah.
So how old were you in third grade?
In third grade, I'm pretty sure I was maybe around eight. So I would have been eight, and yeah.
Right. So somehow between then and now, you got this idea to create this organization, this nonprofit organization called SHOW. So take us on that path. What took you from there to taking these readings and getting kind of interested to the point where you decided to actually create this nonprofit organization?
So, well, in third grade, I did stream testing, and I also got to be on Fox 6 News, and we talked about how it's very important, and I was one of the select students who got to be on it. But then in fourth grade, we have something called Genius Hour where we get to make up our own project about our passion, and I wanted to do something with water purification. So I created my own water filter from a great Gatorade bottle. And so from then onwards, I kind of knew that was a direction that I wanted to go in. And then in fifth grade, I kind of started to get that, and I knew that I wanted to do something called SHOW, and I had the idea of the nonprofit, but we hadn't gotten the status yet. And so I was raising money from like selling candy and lemonade, and I raised a couple hundred dollars maybe from that. And then this year, I'm doing a first Lego League, and the project this year is hydrodynamics. So it's about like wastewater and all of that. So I'm continuing my learning even now. And last year was when I got my nonprofit status, when near the end of the yearish, I got my nonprofit status. And from then onwards, I knew that SHOW was going to be a real nonprofit organization and that whatever we do from now can continue on and the whole world can know about it.
Well, for those of you just joining us, we are speaking to a dynamo by the name of Shritha Reddy. She is an 11-year-old student at Prairie School in Racine. And as you can readily hear, she cares passionately about the issue of water being safe and fresh and clean for all of us here and everywhere. Nan Calvert invited her to be part of the morning show. You have this sort of look of awe on your face, Nan.
Yeah, it's inspiring because having worked with children of all ages for a very long time, so often I hear kids say, "What can I do? I can't do anything. I'm just a kid. Nobody listens to me. Nobody cares." But in truth, even if you're a child and you, for some reason, happen to be listening to this right now, you do have the power to do something. And it doesn't have to be as big as what we're talking about today. It can be something in your own backyard. It could be something in a park that you visit. And then you can just build on it from there. So it's very inspiring for people Shritha's age. It's very inspiring for people my age and everybody in between. It just takes a little bit of action, and it's amazing what can get accomplished.
Right. And it seems to me, actually, that something really important here, too, is it's kind of the opposite of what a lot of young people assume, that, you know, I'm just a kid, I can't do anything, no one listens to me. Mm-hmm. In fact, people really do listen to kids. And probably people are listening to you, Shritha, in a way that they might not listen to your dad or listen to me or listen to Nan. But I mean, the fact that this message is coming from you, there's just something so unexpected and so exciting about that. And I think it has people very much listening. And I think so. I think kids make a mistake, are making a mistake, or making a misassumption when they say, "No one's going to listen to me." People are apt to listen very closely.
Right. I think they don't. I don't think they see it enough. I don't think they, because there are children Shritha's age who are doing things, but they don't get to see it that much.
Right.
They are glued to video games and television and other things. But here we have a real life example of someone who is changing the world, literally, for the better right now, and she's 11 years old. So there you have it, folks. We're done for today. You know, I wanted to ask you a question, if I might. Both you and your brother are deeply involved. Certainly you are with environmental justice, both you and your brother, social justice. How did that come about in your family? Are your parents setting that example? Are they your role models?
Well, our parents are always motivating us, and they never push us to do anything that we don't want to do. They're like, "Whatever you want to do, we'll be there with you, and we'll do anything that you want to do." So when my brother and I got the idea of wanting to help others, it was just kind of, we wanted to do it with our passion, and we did it with our love. And our parents were so happy because they also love to help the community, and we always go to different projects. And it's always good to go and help others. And so my parents are very happy that my brother and I are doing something to help our community, because we need kids and young adults who are going to do something to help our community, because we're the next generation. And so we need to make a change to help our world.
Very good.
I want to hear a little bit about this project in fourth grade, I think you said, where you created your own water filter.
Yeah.
Out of a Gatorade bottle? Did I hear that right?
Yeah.
So I'm really, really curious to know how such a thing is even possible.
So I had a Gatorade bottle, and it was just like a normal Gatorade bottle. And what happened was you cut off the top, and you have like the bottom with the cap. And what you do is you fill it up with different things, because there are different elements and different objects that you can use to help filter out water. And so there was like sand, and there was like coarse sand, there was rocks, there was like fine sand, and there was like different types. So there's rocks, but the main ingredient of doing this was active carbon, because that's what really helps clean out the water, because it kind of helps kill all the bad molecules in it. And so what we would do is I would mix some water and like dirt and rocks and like all this nasty stuff. And so what I had was, on top I just had like kind of like a coffee filter, and so it would like trap anything that was larger and that was like rocks or anything like that on the top, while everything like the actual water part of it went down into the bottom, and it would go through our filter and it would come out through the tap, and we would, and I would put it in a cup. And so I did it quite a few times, but you always have to make sure that you clean the filter out, because if you have like the same residue, if it gets too soft, it might even seep through a little bit. And you always want to make sure that you clean like all the ingredients before you do it. And so I was actually online and I saw like tons of videos on how to do this. And the one video that really struck me was just like this exact same model, except it had a few more different things. Like they added some, like their water bottle was different, but I used more of a Gatorade bottle because I knew that it was a nice sturdy material. And I saw that in other videos that they use Gatorade bottles more because it was stronger and it was just better. And so we put the, and I would put the water through and it would strain it, and we would get more like, it was actually good water. Because my friends and I actually tried it. So, it wasn't bad, but it wasn't good either. So, like, it was right in the middle, but it was leaning more towards the good side. So, it's kind of minerally, I guess. But, I mean, it was good. I mean, I was happy that it even turned out that well. Because now I know that even if you're, like, if you have these materials at home and you want to use it, you can do it. And it's just a fun experiment because you can see how everything works. And there are a lot of water filters out there. Like Mrs. Hinkie Mueller, one time when we were just having some free time, she actually had bought something for me. It was kind of like the Gatorade bottle, except it was more sophisticated and a lot better. And it had the same ingredients. So I knew that whatever I had just made actually was successful and that it was used actually in different things for other kids.
Right.
And
so now you know the principle of how this works, and you have a sense of how this can be applied with different technologies and so on to make this possible in other places then.
Yeah. So there's different things like Life Straw and all of those, but this is just a simple hands-on activity. It doesn't have to be used all around the world, but it's just a good activity for kids to understand, or even adults, just to understand how important it is and how we can use different materials to clean out our water.
Right.
And, of course, it's so very timely now with the flooding in Florida, with the flooding in Texas, and all of that water is now so contaminated.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't have drinking water at the moment. They're bringing it in. So.
Right.
Yeah.
And so a lot of filtering and cleaning is going to have to happen. So when you had this big event in the middle of August at the Racine Theater Guild, this sort of talent show in which you were one of the participants, this was a fundraiser for a very specific project that involved Halo.
Yeah.
So explain to our listeners, although many of them know, but a few of them might not know what Halo is, and explain what you wanted to do for Halo.
Well, Halo is actually the Homeless Assistance Leadership Organization, and it is the homeless shelter in Racine. And so I have a really big connection with them because ever since fourth grade, I volunteered there every single month. And I've served meals there, I've talked with the residents, and I played with the kids. So I've had a really big connection with them, and they're like a big family for me. And I wanted to do something for them because every single time I go there, I notice that they have one water fountain on each side. It's not filtered water. And the one on the women's and children's side is broken. So they don't have a water fountain on the women's and children's side. So I wanted to change that. And on August 12th, we put on a show, and what that was, it was a talent show with the violinists, people who played the flute, dancers, and singers. And I had the teachers, which were very supportive, and they were amazing. And all my teachers really supported the show. And the teachers who teach me my violin, flute, and dance, they picked a few of their students, and they came and they performed at the show. And they were amazing. I gotta thank them so much, because they always were on time for practices, they were always on time for the show, and they were really good on stage, and like they were so good. I can't even say how good they were. They were that good. So that was kind of what the show was. And I performed in it as well. I did my dance, and I played the flute. And so we had people from all over. We had people from Kenosha, Racine, Milwaukee, and Chicago who came to the show. And I was really happy because that just shows that the people in Wisconsin and Illinois are so, they're so helpful and they're so generous, and they came. And we even, after the show, people saw the videos, and they don't. We raised over $500 after the show from online donations. So that just shows how generous people are in Wisconsin and Illinois, and in Illinois. So it was just so. I was just so happy because we raised. We actually passed our goal, and I was so happy because. Passing our goal is one thing, not reaching it is another thing. And so we reached our goal. We have both of the filtered water fountains right now. And they are hopefully, we're trying to get them installed by the end of this month with Mr. Scott Jensen, which is the plumber who volunteered to do this. And so it's just really amazing to see that people are coming together for such a great cause.
That's great. We have these drinking fountain that you are talking about over at Carthage where I teach, so I know exactly what you're talking about. But I have a feeling there's some listeners who don't understand these really special, wonderful drinking fountains that, that you are describing. So explain to our listeners exactly what makes these so special.
Well, what these water fountains are, one, they're filtered, and the other thing is they're a water fountain. But on top, they have a water bottle sensor, so you can put your water bottle in and it'll fill it up. And what you can also see is how much plastic you're saving, because plastic water bottles take a long time to biodegrade. Like they can take over like 10,000 years, and that's like longer than our lifetime by a lot. So putting these in our landfills isn't good for our environment either. So with like different water bottles, you can fill them up once, and you can use them as many times as you want. And so what this will do is you can just fill them up, you can see how much plastic you're saving, and it's filtered water. And we even I have these at my school, and they're all around Racine, and they're in different schools and other places like that.
Right. So in other words, rather than people buying bottles of water and bottles of water and bottles of water, you can have your own permanent container, and you can take it, and this water fountain will dispense it, and it works so well. And like you said, there's a little number gauge at the top that ticks off every time you've used this fountain, you've in effect not used another plastic bottle of water.
Yeah.
And so you get a sense of the difference that you're making just by getting your water and drinking your water in this way. So through your fundraiser, you were able to buy
two of them.
Two of those, and those will be installed for Halo, and so the good folks there will be able to enjoy that. Absolutely. So you're going to do more fundraisers for your nonprofit organization, but I have a feeling even beyond that, you're probably already thinking about other ways that you can try to make a difference when it comes to this issue. Have you thought much about anything specific yet?
Well, for every show, we're always going to have a clear target and clear goal, and we're always going to try to achieve that. Right now, after the first show, I'm still trying to think about different ideas and how we can help locally, because right now, show wants to help locally, and as we grow bigger, it's going to help more global problems. And so on my mind right now, I'm trying to think if there we can do anything for our veterans and if there's anything that I can help them with show. And then the other thing is I also want to improve our lakes and rivers and streams quality. So there are like different biohavens, and I was at the Root River Festival with Mrs. Joan Rory. This one person was Dr. Stefan, and he gave a presentation about biohavens, and they're like floating islands with plants growing out of them, and they help filter out water. And so that's why I'm thinking maybe we can put that, or maybe we can add our own twist to it and put those in our lakes and streams. And that would also help the animals. And because we put our first show for us as humans, and then the next show maybe could be for animals. And that's what I'm thinking.
Sure, fascinating. You created this nonprofit called Show Start Helping Our Water Resources when you were just 10 years old. How hard was it to create a nonprofit organization? What's involved in that?
Well, first you have to kind of get your ideas. You have to get your goals set up. And one of my main goals was, once again, to have a show, because people spend money on entertainment because they enjoy it. They can go to movies. But all that money goes to like the producers or the actors or actresses. But when people come to the shows, it goes for a really good cause. They're having entertainment at the same time, but it's also going for a good cause for local communities. And so first, you have to kind of go through the whole process of getting your goals, and then you have to apply for the nonprofit status, which means you have to still pay money to get the status, and that's, I think it's a $200 like payment to get the status or even apply for the status.
Oh, so that's the thing where you sold lemonade and all of that to get enough money for that.
So it took me 1.5 years to raise $500, and I know the importance of that because after the show we raised $500, and that was in less than a month. So
wow,
it was like, whoa, it's like you can see the difference because it's 1.5 years to raise the same amount as you raised in a month. So it's just like you know that your hard work paid off, and so there's a lot of steps. But after you get the nonprofit status, you have to follow through on your goals because if you just stop there and be like, yes, I got the nonprofit status, nothing's going to happen. So you want to make sure that you follow through on your goals, and you just have to make sure that you just accomplish whatever you want to do.
So does anybody else work with you on show, or is this mostly just Shritha Reddy?
Well, so far it's mainly me, but I have like the show team, and they are a really big part because they help with the whole thing with like the participation because they participated in the show, and they have also helped me with other things because they've just been there, and whenever I say who else has helped me, is maybe it's mostly the show team because it's just they're the first people that came forward and stepped up, and they were the first people who were able to be in the show. And so they are like a real team to me, and they're like a second family.
Excellent. So you at some point are going to schedule a second show and a third and a fourth, I assume?
Yeah, and at those shows, we're going to, as show grows bigger, we're going to be doing more things. Like if you guys could see me, whoever's listening, I have like a show water bottle next to me. And that's just to raise awareness about show. And they're on the show website, which is, once again, shownonprofit.org. So you can buy them online. And it's just, they're nice water bottles. And this also helps reduce plastic, which is better for our environment and also is a vital part of clean water. So, yeah.
Very good. How much are they?
They are $10. So since it's a fundraiser, and they're actually really good water bottles.
They're beautiful and sturdy.
Absolutely. Yeah. Looks really, really good. I think you and I need one of those.
I know I need one.
Absolutely. Shritha, what are your hopes for the future besides, I suspect, continuing to work on issues related to water? Have you thought very much about ultimately what you're maybe hoping to do for your vocation? I mean, for your career, or is it a little early to be talking about that?
Well, I don't know yet. I think that I might want to become a neurosurgeon, but I don't know yet. But for the future for show, I just want to make sure that I inspire others because this isn't just my thing. It's for everyone to come as a show community, and I want to inspire other kids and other people who also have a passion and they just haven't thought about how they can implement it. And it's just I want to help more people around the world, and just even in Flint, Michigan, or Burlington, or Florida, or Texas, or California, even in our United States, or it's just around the world, like Africa, Guatemala, or any other places like that. It's just to inspire others and just help and make others happy and give them clean water.
Shritha Reddy was an 11-year-old middle school student at Prairie at the time that we recorded this interview last year. More information is available about show at the website shownonprofit.org. For part two of today's program, I want to replay for you a portion of my conversation with a former voice student of mine at Carthage College by the name of Brett Harmeling. Brett now lives in Houston, Texas as a financial planner, and Brett engaged in some amazing real-life heroism in the wake of Hurricane Harvey. Brett possesses a very special vehicle which can go just about anywhere, including through floodwaters. And Brett engaged in dozens and dozens of rescue operations all around the city of Houston. And I was greatly honored to be able to speak with Brett about that experience and about the beautiful city of Houston, which means so much to him. That's where we began. I asked him to talk about the city of Houston.
Got it. So Houston has become a home to me over the past 5 years. I moved here taking a job opportunity that engaged my professional communication and leadership skills. back in 2012, and ever since I've just seen Houston really come together as an amazing city. I moved to Houston from Chicago. I always loved Chicago, but Houston having year-round summers essentially has been a blessing to not have to deal with the Midwestern winters. Also, the opportunity and growth that Houston has the capability to grow into is something that I've never seen. There's opportunities in pretty much every industry here. Even when oil and gas is down, there's still plenty of things people can get their hands involved in and generate an income for their family and future. So,
well said.
I've
yeah.
really found a good church down here called Ecclesia. I'm a part of several organizations, one of those being the Mankind Project, and I'm also heavily involved with Big Power Yoga, which is not just a yoga studio. It's a beautiful community of people that are out to do big things in the world and make a big impact. So I'm really grateful to have found those communities years ago.
Cool. Well, and you've certainly made an impact on a lot of people's lives in the course of this storm. Ahead of us talking about some of these heroic measures you take, I just want to know what it was like for you as someone experiencing their very first hurricane. I mean, you haven't really lived in Houston long enough to have experienced, for instance, the big hurricane that hit the area 10 years ago. So this was your first hurricane. How scary was it as Harvey was approaching, and what were you doing to prepare for it?
So given that I know that where I reside in Houston is near Memorial Park, and I wasn't in any imminent danger of being flooded, I also live on the fifth floor of a mid-rise complex, and so I knew that I wasn't going to have a problem with anything maybe besides power, and so we didn't actually lose power. And so that took my own personal fear out of the mix. And so when I knew that I was going to be okay, it's not like a tornado where it comes in and just hits and it's gone. It's like it's been dark clouds, rain, constant heavy rain, and moderate to strong winds for, you know, since last week, Saturday. So what happened is Friday, everyone went to bed saying, okay, the hurricane's not really that bad yet. Well, they woke up, and I don't know what the statistic is, but the water rose so much in such a short period of time that what happens is, since we're in Houston and everything drains to the coast, water compounds from even Austin and San Antonio and makes its way through Houston. So if we get 20 inches of rain here, that's not even including the 20 inches of rain or wherever else got the rain that where the water runs through Houston. And so areas flood really quick. The reservoirs were cresting, which means overflowing. And so they had to release those, and they released them yesterday. And so today it's sunny, beautiful here in Houston. However, there's still massive flooding. There's still people on roofs. I mean, the work is nowhere even close to being done. I would say there's probably 1,000 people that are still need to be rescued.
Wow. So at
what point did it take time today just to create awareness around an event that I didn't think would have been so tragic and devastating, and it happened. And so with that being said, I believe it's important as human beings to always be prepared for situations, whether it's a health problem, a financial problem, or a natural disaster, things that are out of our control. And so that's, you know, one of the things that I personally do with my clients is make sure that they are prepared for as many of life's events, whether they're positive or negative, that they can be.
Yeah. So. Good philosophy. So at what point, Brett, did it occur to you that you had a vehicle that could make its way through some of these floodwaters and that you could actually get out there and maybe rescue some people from imminent danger? I mean, at what point did that occur to you? Or even ahead of Harvey hitting, did you already have that in your head that this was something that you could do?
Immediately. So my friend CJ Bro started a company called Tactical Off-Road, and we build Jeeps that go pretty much anywhere in the country. And so when we built my Jeep, I knew my Jeeps. It's like a warrior or a person in karate knows their skills. They know what they can use. They know the tools that they have that they can use. And so one thing going hand in hand with that is sorry, I'm getting another call. One thing going with that is that they were able to, you know, I was able to know the capabilities of my own vehicle without risking my putting myself in danger. And so that's one thing that I want to also communicate is that if you don't know, Jeeps are great vehicles, but if you don't know what its capability is, it's a worse situation if you put yourself in harm's way, because then someone else has to rescue you.
Absolutely. So explain what makes your Jeep Wrangler Rubicon such a special vehicle and the way in which it was sort of custom built to be perfect for what you ended up using it for.
Yeah, so we put on it's called a bolt-on coilover suspension kit from Evo Manufacturing out in California. It's essentially like a professional-grade racing suspension that's adjustable from 3.5 to 6 inches. So we had it adjusted to its maximum height. And then I'm riding on 37-inch tires that are all-terrain, made for rock climbing. So, you know, that's good as well because the treads disperse water in a way that other, you know, generic tires don't, as well as there's a lot of stuff that my tires are pretty torn up because there's a lot of stuff that you're going over that you don't know what it is under the water. And so oftentimes people can get flat tires and whatnot. Well, these tires, you know, save the day because they can go over nails and glass. And unless it's a huge, sharp object, they have a small chance of deflating.
Mm. So how did the rescue missions begin in terms of knowing where to go, knowing who needed help? I mean, how did you know where to go? How did you know where there were people who needed rescuing?
Great question, Greg. So it started off, my friend Rafael Cordova owns a house in the Heights, and the bayou had flooded over TC Jester and was rising. And so due to him being my friend, I was like, I need to come get you. And so we traversed through the bayou. It was about 3.5 feet of water, so the water at times would be almost over my hood. And we got him, and it was like a scene out of a movie. When we got to the other side of this, of the bayou and turned the corner, there was over 100 people there stranded, almost as if they were on an island with absolutely nothing. The look in their eyes, I'll never forget. And that's when I knew, this is Saturday morning, that's when I knew that Houston needed my help and the help of everyone here. And, you know, so with that going said, I'm using the tools that I have, and so are other people. You know, I get humbled when people ask to do interviews, and I say, you know, we're all in this together. I'm doing what I know how to do best, and I'm on the ground, you know, boots on the ground, Jeep on the ground, whatever you want to call it. And I'm out there and relaying the messages of how areas are, you know, delivering people and goods to convention centers. When I say that I rescued or saved 54 people, that's the amount of people that I believe that would have been in life-threatening situation. I've had well over 100 people in my Jeep transported, whether that mean for volunteer efforts or to just dry land. Like, hey, can you take me to my friend's house?
Right.
Things like that. And what's cool, the social media awareness factor, which I take pride in, because a lot of the efforts that were able to happen from that. I had people reaching out all over the country asking me to save their parents, their friends. And if I couldn't, or if I wasn't in that area because I was busy, I had several other people that I could reach out to for the message, and those people went out of their way to handle the same situation. And so through my essentially social media page, it was a catalyst for a lot of people to, you know, get help.
Right, to make connections and make it happen one way or another. When you would rescue somebody, for instance, were you rescuing people who were up on their roofs? Or I mean, typically, what was the situation that you would find when you got to, for instance, somebody's home where they are stranded there? Where would they be, and what was involved for you besides just driving your vehicle there? Then what would you do?
Yeah. Yep. So once you get to the scene, then depending on so there's a lot of variables, but depending on their physical capability and age, and what they had, if they had dogs or, you know, things that they had, we had to get serious and have some real conversations about what they needed and what they wanted. And so at certain points, like there was one elderly couple that I had to literally swim to their roof. Like, so I had to get out of my Jeep, park it so that it was away. I don't know if you know how Houston's set up, but where the bayous go, the water floods quick. And so then you could be like 20 feet away and the water over there could be 10 feet deep, and where you are, that could be a foot deep.
Wow.
And so I just gauged the depth of the water based on the signs, the mailboxes, things like that. People would be on their front porches, you know. Oftentimes I'd look for the door handle on the door, and that would be a good gauge of how high the water was. Once again, I didn't drive my vehicle in anywhere where I knew that I would get stuck, because then I would become a problem, and I didn't want to become another person's problem or put myself in
right.
danger. And so oftentimes it was just pulling up, because I went to the communities and areas. It was either Jeep, like our high water vehicle, or boat. And so either people would get transferred from boat from a rescue team. Like, this wasn't just me. By the way, there's like hundreds of people that have helped out. And so I'm just posting my experience to create awareness that this is a real thing happening right now.
Right. And you were part of a huge effort. And what the article on the Carthage website mentions is that at some point you actually were welcomed by county authorities into their sort of coordinated response team. Can you explain what that means? I mean, what sort of difference did that make when this became more than just kind of your own individual effort?
Yeah, so that gave me access to having so the people that I was attached to were the Harris County Attorney General's office, and we had officers that were in communication with people in the helicopters. And so, you know, you can watch the news, but that doesn't tell you where the access points and people are actually needing to save. Getting out there and being on the ground is like how we were able to identify the people in the most amount of need. And when the storm kind of left yesterday, it absolutely like swiped out Port Aransas. And so, like I said, there's still thousands of people just waiting to be picked up, and that's a boat situation. They're in deep water over there.
Hmm.
But also, what that gave me access to is I had the credentials in my Jeep to go to basically be a government officiated vehicle. So I didn't have to wait in lines. I could go around people. I could get people that were in critical condition to medical attention faster. I had lights, you know, in my vehicle that allowed us to do that, as well as the individual that I was riding, basically my co-pilot riding around with. And he would pull the address, we'd go there, he'd be in communication with the helicopter or whoever needed to be, and then we would pursue the mission. I call it a mission. Everyone's a little bit different.
Right. So it's like you were deputized, which is really interesting.
Yeah, pretty much. That's what it felt like.
Yeah. In the early going, before that occurred, when you're just kind of doing this on your own, how did you know where you could take people? What information did you have at your disposal in terms of what shelters there were, or where it was safe to deposit people?
Yeah, so that information is all very well communicated via news, social media outlets, Facebook, Instagram, that kind of thing. And, you know, when we first started this, I mean, George R. Brown, we were like, okay, this will be great, 5,000 people, no problem. Well, then we capped it at 8,000, and then we had to start bringing people to the NRG Center and the Toyota Center also opened, and then other churches and people started opening their doors because they realized the severity of the problem. But going in there, you know, you see people, and you look at them and you think that they have had to basically say goodbye to, you know, all the things that they've collected and things that are important to them in their life, and that all they had was right there with them. You know, that was hard for me to see. And at the same time, I just, you know, I offered love and support. I prayed with some people, told them I love them, told them that we're going to get through this together, just to keep the positive vibes going. You know, people tend to go into victim or shame mode. And the truth is, you know, this didn't happen to them. This happened for them. So with that, whatever that means, to each individual is different, but you have to take this as an opportunity to rebuild, to recenter, refocus, and move forward in a way that we may have not been living previously.
Carthage graduate Brett Harmeling now making